This episode of Just the Right Book is brought to you by BetterHelp. Get on your way to being your best self. Give online therapy a try at betterhelp.com/writebook. We are living in stressful times, and the hustle and bustle of the holidays can make it even more stressful. If you're considering starting therapy, try BetterHelp. It's entirely online and designed to be flexible and convenient. You just fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with the best for you licensed therapist. Now is the time to give yourself what you need with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/writebook today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/writebook. This is Roxanne Cody. Thanks for listening. And now back to Just the Right Book. This is Just the Right Book, and I'm Roxanne Cody of RJ Julia Booksellers. Each week, I hope to bring to you the stories behind the books, talking with some of the very best contemporary nonfiction authors, books that are timeless and charming, provocative, and of the moment. The conversations you want to hear about the books you need to read. This is Roxanne Cody, and I'm welcoming you to Just the Right Book Shorts. We keep calling this an experiment, but I think we're in our 12th or 13th episode. So it's not an experiment, but it doesn't mean it's not subject to changing the format. So remember, you could write to us at podcast@rjjulia.com. But I'm delighted again to welcome Bill Goldstein, who's an author and book critic on NBC, and my pal in talking about all things books. So what we've been doing is just trying to stick to under 20 minutes, give you a fast snippet of a book that we loved and why, and then maybe on another topic that we're in the mood to talk about. So Billy, let's start with you.
Yes. So I wanted to talk first about an older book, a book that I read on vacation because it was a book that my book club chose called The Transit of Venus by Shirley Hazzard. And this was published in 1980 and was recently reissued as a Penguin Classic. So it's in a beautiful new edition that I think came out in the last year. So Penguin Classics has made it a current book all over again. But this book won the National Book Critics Circle Award in 1981. So it was acclaimed in its day and I think has never been forgotten by the people who loved it. It is such an amazing book. It's about two sisters. I mean, I always hate to sum up a novel and say what it's about because it so often just reduces it to the thread of a plot that doesn't necessarily say about the richness of what the book is. But it's about two sisters, two Australian sisters who, across their lives, they end up leaving Australia as young girls. Their parents, this happens very early on, die in a ferry accident. And they go to live in England with their older half-sister. And it is about their relationship with each other, their relationships with the past, their love affairs, their marriages over the decades. And it is just one of the most brilliant novels I've read in decades. And an astonishingly beautiful, the characterizations are so rich. The sisters have so much in common and yet are so different. Caroline and Grace. And then the almost comic sadness of their older sister, who is, you know, the most complaining kvetch, this side of the Catskills, and yet whose own life is very difficult. And what happens to them from basically the 40s into the present, which was 1980, and what love means in each person's life and the compromises that are made. But I think the thing that will carry you through this is not only the sharp characterizations of the sisters and the men that they love, but also the beauty of the language and the way in which the past and present keep intermingling in everybody's minds as they try to make their lives. So The Transit of Venus is just brilliant. And I urge everyone to read it with their book club or on their own. And I loved it.
So, Bill, I'm thrilled that you brought this up because one of my big reading buddies is Mark Salter, who is a writer as well. And Mark and I have Transit of Venus in our top 25 books of all time.
Oh, how great.
And it's funny because I'm up in Maine and I brought it up with me last summer to reread, which I haven't yet done, but it's sitting in the pile that's like third in line. You know, I have these organized by bookcases. So thank you for bringing that up because people would be very helped by reading that. Okay, so I'm going to talk about a book that's out in paperback that I think about a lot. I had interviewed him for the podcast when the book came out in hardcover. It's called 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals by Oliver Berkman. And what I love about this book is he doesn't talk about time management so that you're ever increasingly, like a mouse in a cage, more productive, but rather to think about there's only so many weeks in your life. There's only so many days in your life. And that if you really want to manage your time, you're going to think about the limit of time and therefore think in a very sharp way about what you don't want to do and get rid of it. Because what we think of is, oh, you add more to the list, check the boxes, get it all done, blah, blah, you know, this kind of never-ending standard of productivity. He talks about thinking about how will you value what you do. And so if people, like some of us aging, are beginning to think, well, I only have so much time left, how do I want to spend it? This is the kind of book to read. And you don't have to be older. It could be your any age. Mm-hmm. And you're just thinking about how you spend your time. So it's 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals.
I think I need to get that. I think I need to have gotten it about 20 years ago or 40 years.
It's never too late. It's never too late, Billy Goldstein.
Okay. Well, thank you.
This episode of Just the Right Book is brought to you by BetterHelp. Get on your way to being your best self. Give online therapy a try at betterhelp.com/writebook. We are living in stressful times, and the hustle and bustle of the holidays can make it even more stressful. If you're considering starting therapy, try BetterHelp. It's entirely online and designed to be flexible and convenient. You just fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with the best for you licensed therapist. Now is the time to give yourself what you need with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/writebook today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/writebook. This is Roxanne Cody. Thanks for listening. And now back to Just the Right Book. All right, your turn.
Well, so I think we also want to talk about books, as we often do, about books that we are looking forward to. And another book I read on vacation, I just got home a couple of days ago, so I was away for about 10 days, but was on a train part of the time for a long time and also on a plane. So I did a lot of reading. I read the new novel, I guess this is a bit of news for our listeners, by Michael Cunningham. It's his first novel in 10 years. It's called Day, a novel, and it's being published by Random House in November, November 14th. It was originally scheduled for January, and I guess they're enthusiastic about it, and they've pushed it up to fall. So it is a novel set on one day, April 5th, in three different years. April 5th, 2019, in the morning of that day, afternoon of April 5th, 2020, which is, of course, few weeks after the lockdown. And then the final part is the evening a year later of April 5th, 2021. And the book is so beautifully written, as all of his books are. What is wonderful about this book that I think will remind people of The Hours, which is his great book and one of the great books. I mean, if we're talking about the transit of Venus, as we just did, I think I would add The Hours into that list of undying books from the last, you know, half century, is the sharp characterizations and the way in which people love, and I wouldn't go so far as to say despise, but resent people in their lives and can't quite make sense of their role in their lives. They love them and are angry and resentful. And this is brought in particular in the central section during the lockdown into sharp focus with this one particular family in Brooklyn: Isabel, her husband Dan, their children Violet and Nathan, and then it's Isabel's brother Robbie, who is sort of the central character in a way, and yet he's also in some ways the most shadowy, and the choices he's made, how he comes to terms with his and Isabel's parents, all of this is happening psychologically while their daily lives, or their day life, I mean, their one day life in this daily life, is playing out. And Michael Cunningham is just so brilliant at having time pass in that way, in this case, just the hours of a day, and yet also bringing in the past and even people's fears and hopes for the future, and just the way in conversation and also in the subtler subconscious ways they're relating, how all of this plays out together. So it's called Day, and I guess like The Hours, he has made a sort of, you know, his way of doing it is to braid three stories together. I mean, in the same way that Mrs. Brown, Mrs. Dalloway, and Mrs. Wolfe were the three stories in The Hours. And so I loved it. It's beautiful, and it's coming in November.
Billy, you know, what I was thinking about as you were talking about that book, is it as if you're hearing or reading about the subconscious of what informs what people say or do?
Very much so. I mean, it's very much what including the children. I mean, Violet and Nathan, Violet is about five, I think, in the first section. So she then becomes six and seven. Nathan is 10. And the way in which they, as children, are also learning the ways of the adults around them to say certain things while meaning others, how children are very sensitive to what their parents in particular are saying and doing, and yet what it really means or what they take it to mean. And so there's a great subtlety in the description of the children, which in some way is even more carefully and sort of expertly done than the adults, who we see fooling themselves more often than the children do. So there's a directness in the way that you're talking about to explain that distinction. I don't want to make it sound as if it's an overly psychological novel. I mean, it's a very direct book. I mean, it's not like, oh, we're veering into Henry James territory here. You're never lost in the consciousness of any of these characters. And it moves very quickly in that way, cross-cutting from one to the other.
Well, I hope we haven't been mean to people listening that they're going to now have to wait until the fall to read this book. You can always pre-order it from your local independent bookstore, so you know you'll get it on day one. But I'm definitely going to get a galley of this. Thank you for that, Billy. The book I'm going to talk about is a new book. It just came out, I think, in June, or I'm not sure. But it's called My Husband, and it's translated from the French. The author is Maud Ventura, and it was translated by Emma Ramadan. And this doesn't sound like a big endorsement, but it is a weird book. But it's a weird book that I couldn't put down. So it's narrated by the wife of my husband. And she is chronically insecure about her husband's love. And she's like testing it. She's very deliberate about when she knows he's coming in the door, of how she's arranged on the sofa. There's this kind of psychological back and forth that she does. You don't necessarily get a picture of the husband, except obviously through her voice. It's not really clear she's a reliable narrator, but it's very much about marriage, confidence in your relationship, how you might contextualize your own betrayals. And then, so you're reading through this book, you're getting a little bit bored with, okay, enough already with doing this, but you just cannot let her go. You just cannot let her go. And then the last chapter is by the husband. And it reshapes everything that you've just read. And so I was so glad I read this book, but I do want to caution everybody that if you want like a straightforward story, you're going to be annoyed at me for recommending this. But if you like experimenting with your fiction reading, you will be rewarded by reading this. I'm not sure you'll love it any more than I did, but I was really happy I read it. So I don't know if that's like...
Oh, I love that. No, this makes me, I love the way you describe it, that there are books that you're not sure what to make of them. You're compelled, you're reading through, maybe you don't love it, and yet you would never have traded the reading experience.
Yeah. You know what it reminded me of? What was the book that was a huge success about sleeping? Her initials are IM, I think. Oh my goodness.
You mean The Year of Rest and Relaxation?
Yes.
By Otessa Moshfeghi? Oh, God. Yes. I do remember that book. And I did love that book. I mean, it's one of the strangest books I've ever read. And I loved it. So
This is reminiscent of that, I would say. It's reminiscent of that. So it's called My Husband. Anyway, in the couple of minutes that we have left, I want to mention a book coming out that was announced last week that I cannot wait to read. Unfortunately, it's another book coming out in the fall, but I think it's September. Again, you can pre-order it from your independent bookstore, and it's called Enough by Cassidy Hutchinson. And Cassidy is the young woman that worked in the Trump White House, had testified before the January 6th commission, represented by a Trump-related lawyer, and then contacted the commission to say that she would like to testify again. And she had gotten a different set of lawyers to represent her that were independent. And, you know, in the simplest version, you would call her a whistleblower, that she revealed things that were going on in the White House that were new to the January 6th commission and were sort of stunning revelations. She was in her 20s when she did this. And, you know, I don't think we know much more about her than that was a very brave thing to do. How she came to be in the Trump White House, how she found the bravery to testify before the January 6th commission is unceasingly fascinating to me. So I don't know if there'll be a galley of this book. It might very well be embargoed for all I know, but I can't wait to read it. So it's called Enough by Cassidy Hutchinson. So that wraps up our episode. Hopefully you've heard about a book that you're dying to read. Please remember to write to us at podcast@rjjoy if you have any suggestions. Remember to follow Just the Right Podcast on Instagram. And, well, I guess what I can say, since it's the summertime, happy reading, and we'll keep letting you know about books that we love. Billy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Roxanne.
You are listening to Just the Right Book with Roxanne Cody, brought to you by LitHub Radio. The show is produced by Roxanne Cody, Michael Selleck, and LitHub Radio. Our editor is Gino Cardone at Pleasant Podcast. The original theme music is by Kurt Feldman. You can subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcast. I am Roxanne Cody. Thank you so much for listening. And if you have any comments, observations, suggestions, we'd love to hear from you. You can email me at justtherightbook@rjjulia.com.